Hello and welcome to Let the Bird Fly, a podcast about living freely in a world given back to us. This is Wade here together with my co-host. I can no longer say the splendidly bearded, but now baby-faced. I just want to pinch those cheeks. Peter Hermanson, and also with us we have back again after an episode off, our computer tech guy, computer janitor, Ben. And with us also in the studio, a.k.a. my office, a.k.a. the Beat Factory, we are privileged to have with us here a colleague from over in the science building, Dr. Carrie Keene, who teaches here in the physics department and is also the author of four recent volumes out in a series, A Student's Guide Through the Great Physics Texts. And he's going to be joining us today to talk a little bit about physics. Carrie, would you like to say anything to briefly introduce yourself?
Well, thank you for the kind introduction. I'm, as you mentioned, a professor here at the college, and I like to work on these books, but I also do some work in the laboratory. My research focus in the laboratory is primarily on fluid physics. We do a little bit of experiments with bubbles now, and so that's been keeping me busy in the lab.
Well, excellent. We're very happy to have you here, and we're looking forward to getting to our main topic later in the show where we will be discussing that. We are also joined by two junior members of the podcast. I suppose we can go from youngest to oldest and let them introduce themselves to us today.
My name's Allie, and I'm 7, and I go to Trinity Academy, and I really like soccer.
You like excellent. Soccer is your favorite sport. Just be careful, though. You may turn into a socialist if you play too much. And our next guest will let introduce herself.
My name is Oliva. I'm 10 years old. I'm in fifth grade. I go to Trinity Academy in Pewaukee, and I enjoy field hockey.
Oliva, what was your boyfriend's name?
I don't have a boyfriend.
That is a great answer, and I pray it remains the answer for quite some time. I'm sure your baby-faced father would be happy with that. Too. Well, with that, I would just like to briefly remind, if you've been enjoying the episode so far, that we would truly appreciate if you would subscribe, rate, and review away. It really does help to get the word out, share on Facebook, things of that nature. It's been fun to see the audience grow, and we'd love to add voices to our conversation. And with that in mind, we will now let Peter give us our disclaimer before we get into the meat of the podcast.
This show does not speak for our churches, our church bodies, or our employers. To be honest, much of the time, it probably doesn't speak for us. We will be thinking out loud a lot. Approach what you hear with a healthy skepticism because, well, as a responsible resident of planet Earth, that's probably what you should generally do with almost everything. If you find yourself getting too worked up, tune out, look around, and realize you were just listening to a podcast. A podcast. So go live free, friends, and don't let us get in the way.
That brings us to our scripture narrative for today. We've been bouncing around in the New Testament for a while, and today, as I was trying to think of something that might connect to our topic, I decided to take us to the Psalms and just briefly introduce why it's worthwhile to be looking at the things that we're looking at, just in and of themselves, but also as Christians, why we should have an interest in such things as physics or the sciences. So Psalm 19, chapter 19, that is, verses 1 through 6. I will read this time as we go through. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. Day to day pours out speech, and night to night reveals knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words whose voice is not heard. Their voice goes out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them he has set a tent for the sun, which comes out like a bridegroom leaving his chamber, and like a strong man runs its course with joy. Its rising is from the end of the heavens, and its circuit to the end of them, and there is nothing hidden from its heat. It's interesting, if you study Lutheran history and Lutheran universities that developed around them, fairly early on there was a push to expand our studies of what we might consider the hard sciences today, things like physics. And part of the reason was that the Reformers realized that while God comes to us with the gospel through his revealed word, we also have many things we can learn about God through the heavens and through nature. Philip Melanchthon, Luther's colleague in Wittenberg, was very interested in astronomy, for instance. If God had set the stars in place, perhaps there could be things that we could learn from them. And so while we come to Christ, our knowledge of him and into Christ through word and sacrament, we can also grow to appreciate the many gifts that God has given us, and that's what this podcast is about, the world given back as gift in creation around us. We can learn more about ourselves, more about our Creator, and just also more about what it is to live as a creature in a created world. And with that in mind, then, we will approach physics today as one of the many gifts that God gives back to us, redeemed children of God, to appreciate his love all the more, and also to dig deeper into the wonders of his creation. With that in mind, then, we will make our way to the free-for-all.
With the free-for-all, where we mine the pressing questions of life, and today we have a question, or a set of questions, I guess, that that continues with these serious conversations we're trying to have, and that has to do with laws and signs. Is it, to put it simply, do you feel, gentlemen, that there should be more laws or less laws? Should there be, as a derivative, more signs or less signs? So that's the setup here. Why don't we let Wade lead us off with his thoughts?
And I'll admit the sign idea was partly my own. I don't want to pick on any community in our area. I greatly enjoy the Milwaukee area. But there's a certain utopian suburb presses up against the city that I've discovered when I'm out driving or riding my bike just has a deep and thoroughgoing love for signs. Sometimes I just ride around and look, and there are new signs to find each time. Signs everywhere, signs. And so that's partly what brought this up, but I would like to start off, before I give my take on this, with asking our two junior members here today. I'm assuming you have rules in school. What is your least favorite rule at school? It can be a rule your teacher has, a recess rule. What is your least favorite rule? I'll let you guys pick who wants to go first, if one of you has an answer.
I'll go first. My least favorite rule at school is probably not being allowed to take our snack outside, because we don't get to eat inside.
And if
we
don't
get to eat outside.
And if you remember, this is a problem because they have three recesses, so they spend most of their day outside.
Wait, you can't eat outside?
No.
What's the rationale behind that?
Apparently, they don't want the trash out there, and they don't want the animals coming in with the crumbs or something.
Okay.
And Ellie, do you have a least favorite rule at school?
I don't think so.
You just like all the rules?
Ellie embraces the rules.
That's excellent. So, Ellie, you will be our resident legalist for the night. The Lutheran Church has always had those and needs those as a corrective. And so we will be quick to turn to you if any of us are concerned about our motives or general morality. But I joke, Allie is wonderfully grounded in Sunday school. She does not quite have the same level of Sunday school teachers that Oliva has with Peter and I. She probably has a much better Sunday school teacher. So, Oliva, I think I'm on your side with the you should be able to eat outside or wherever you want. This is America. I guess to get it started briefly, I'll say I'm somewhat torn on this. If I had to place myself politically, which in the parish I always tried very hard not to do because I didn't want to cause confusion for people, except on the issues God had spoken on, I'd have to say deep down, I probably tend to lean libertarian more than anything, probably socialist libertarian on a couple issues. I oftentimes joke with people, if I were to have a three-plank political position or platform, it would be don't kill babies would be number one, followed by bike lanes and trains. Namely, that I am for both of those, and I understand libertarians probably can't build the same type of public transport system as socialists, although I suppose they could argue the free market would would develop it. But I would tend, especially with signs, to say less signs. Sometimes when I'm out driving or riding, I find myself looking at so many signs that I realize I'm not watching the road. So I'm going to go with less laws, less signs. I have a feeling this might be a popular opinion in this room today. Peter, I'll take it back to you then.
I can't disagree with Wade. Well, I can disagree with Wade, and I will on the bike lanes and trains issue. But yeah, in general, I would say less signs, less laws. This is, you know, I mean, isn't this America after all? This is what freedom's all about. Why do we need so many directives? Can't we just live free here? Ben, your thoughts?
I'm actually probably going to surprise you with my take. I need the signs, and I need them desperately. I'm thinking mostly of road signs. I cannot navigate worth anything. I pull off the interstate to get gas, and I don't even know which way to get back on. You think I'm exaggerating, but I am hopeless when it comes to directions. So road signs, yes. Other signs, yeah, I think most of them just kind of come down to don't be a jerk. That's the only sign they'd have to put up, and I think that would cover a whole bunch of different different things.
Yeah, I think I've seen that bumper sticker. It was maybe not quite so nice, but same sentiment.
Yeah, well, we've got children in the studio today.
When we lived in Rotterdam in the Netherlands, when coming into our neighborhood in the city, you kind of crossed over a little bit of a traffic area and development, and then you got into the neighborhood, and they didn't have a lot of signs, but they had a big wooden child with like a broken leg and like bandaged head that simply said, you know, be careful. And I always thought that sign probably covered everything you need to know about driving through the neighborhood. Don't make, you know, little Ulrich or whatever Dutch boy desperately injured. Carrie, I'm going to open it up to you now. Where do you fall? More laws, more signs, less signs?
Well, I think the sign question is an interesting one. I tend to like the kind of signs that provide important information, like, you know, falling rocks, something like that.
Where that's it's a good one.
Just indicative sorts of statements about things that are going to happen if you do things in a certain way. And informative signs are generally good. I tend to not like the imperative signs that are, you know, stop. I just think that generally when you come to an intersection, it's kind of obvious that you should slow down and look around. And, you know, when there's a stop sign, there could be no car within eyesight, hundreds of yards, and you still have to come to a stop and let the car idle for a moment and then go. And it just seems like a waste of gas and a waste of inertia, you know?
Well, and I mean, do you think though that, I mean, if there were no cars coming, do you think that anyone would have an issue with that? That would maybe, you know, if you didn't come to a complete stop, that would...
But it's never been a problem for me when I roll through stop signs. But there is a slight pang of guilt as I do it, especially if my wife's there or if my kids are in the car. But, you know, stop lights, I can't count the number of times I've come to an intersection and sat at a red light for with no not reason. A car in sight and thinking, boy, I'm just wasting gas here.
Yeah. And Carrie rode his bike here today, and so as a fellow cyclist, I'm curious your opinion. We get to stopping at intersections. I believe we call it the Idaho stop, where if you are cycling, be honest, you come to the intersection, you're at the red light or the stop sign, and I know this makes people and cars upset, but I think they should deal with it. Stop the whole time or just kind of roll through?
Depends on the intersection traffic at the time, I suppose. If it's someone who clearly hasn't seen me, I will definitely come to a stop. But a lot of times people will slow down and sort of wave you on or indicate they've seen you, in which case I will oftentimes roll through.
Yeah, I sometimes have them waving at me too. I don't know if there's something wrong with them, not with all their fingers. But I tend to roll through as well. When I'm able, I know that will upset some
people.
Maybe
they've just listened to the podcast. Wait.
Yeah, that could be. They're letting the bird fly, living freely, giving the world back to me, I suppose. What about the laws, Carrie? Any take on that? More laws or less laws?
Oh, well, definitely less laws. Well, I guess it depends on what you mean by laws. I think that there are certain natural laws that we all are, it's incumbent upon us to recognize, but I tend to be opposed to positive law where the government could just sort of say this is the law now, and then they take it back a week later or a month later or 2 years later and say now this is no longer the law. And
that would never happen.
So I tend to think that those laws are superfluous.
So you would support the first plank of Wade's political campaign? Then?
Don't kill babies?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a natural law.
That's what
exactly.
I mean.
Okay.
That is, there's an article a while back that I talk about in ethics class, where someone said, according to evolution, babies developed to be cute so we wouldn't eat them. So they must not think it was natural law not to kill them. But I almost think the cuteness makes them appear more delicious, if we're going to be honest. But I would support a law for that, if should that ever become a big issue.
I don't know that babies look cute right away. Are we all in agreement on that? I think they kind of look like aliens.
but they very quickly get there.
Yeah, well, right. Yeah, that's true.
Some do. Mothers keep us away from them until that point.
Ali and Aliva, do you have any opinion on that? Should we eat babies?
I say no, because if you ate babies, none of us would be here right now.
Oh, you wouldn't have to eat all babies.
Just some babies, like a Jonathan Swift, or what is that?
A modest proposal.
Fatten them up. Allie, as our resident legalist, what's your take on this?
I say no, because if you ate babies, I think it's depending on religions, you might not be able to go to heaven.
That is an excellent point that may work its way into salvation issues. I am very impressed with the Hermanson children bringing the theological and philosophical heat today, and appreciate it. One question, Carrie, before we let the free-for-all come to the end, a question I like to ask all of our guests. I don't know, are you much of a baseball fan?
No.
No? Okay, excellent. So feel free to just agree with me if you'd like to. But in baseball, do you think there should be the designated hitter or the pitcher should have to hit? Ben was texting me, mocking my stance on this the other day, so it's I have fresh wounds over this.
Now, is the designated hitter the one with the that does a slap shot through the goalposts?
Yeah, he's the fat guy who can hit the ball. Yeah,
right. Yeah, so that sounds good.
All right, excellent. I appreciate that, Ben. What if you want? I'll let you briefly explain why you were taunting me the other day.
Oh, I was just watching the Brewers versus the Cardinals, and it was 2-1, and the pitchers had all three RBIs. One of them hit a two-run home run, and the other drove in a run. So Blue Wade's theory out the window.
Yeah, Pastor Bordelon, our guest from Episode 3, was also texting me. He was at the Brewers game. The Tigers were on, but he was at the Brewers game, and so he missed out on watching the Tigers implode that night. Hopefully he got to watch the other day, though. That was quite an interesting game. They were playing the Twins, I think the number two team for my co-host and our computer janitor here. And I don't know what your guys' take was if you watched it, but I thought the Twins got a little bit dirty. Hit Jacoby Jones in the face, and then Boyd threw behind, I think it was Sano, and he tried to make a big issue of it. So my position on the Twins the other day was a bunch of babies, and I hope Jacoby Jones is all right. But
yeah, you would say that.
Yeah. I will admit, though,
were just hungry.
my stance on DH versus pinch hitter did take a little bit of a kick to the gut, as Ben pointed out. But I think it still stands, and I appreciate Carrie's uninformed agreeance with me, and I will treasure that always. With that in mind, unless we have anything else for the free-for-all, I think maybe we can make our way into talking about the stuff we brought Dr. Keenan to talk about. Crafted some questions for our guest physicist here today, and I want everyone to be aware I have not let him look at these yet, because I want to kind of get at, is science real? Now, I just want to lead off with, Carrie, as you know, I have been ordained a pastor, so I pretty much am a scientist. We all know Christian pastors become experts on science at ordination, so if you do have any questions about, like, you know, the Grand Canyon or things of that nature, I'm happy to tell you about rock layers or whatever that's called. But first, Carrie, when did you have to give up your faith in Jesus to be a scientist?
Yeah, I somehow must have missed that lecture where it was demonstrated that God doesn't exist at some point in my coursework. So I guess I didn't get the memo, but no, I think you're right. There is sort of a notion that people have that sometime back in maybe the 18th century or maybe the 19th century, there was some some guy, you know, Friedrich von Russell Hume or somebody who who had this, you know, irrefutable proof that God doesn't exist, and some of us just didn't read the paper yet. And, you know, I guess I just didn't read that paper.
I appreciate the answer. I think something fun for an episode at some point would be, is that view something so much that the scientific community has given that impression to Christians, or more Christians have kind of fostered that themselves? And I personally think probably the latter. There's been an unhealthy strain in Christianity that kind of assumes there has to be a Christian or science type thing, and so that's, I joke, but that's what I'm after, and we can maybe come back to that in a bit. I want to get into my second question because I'm very concerned about this, and it's kind of come up recently in the NBA with a number of players coming out on this issue. Can you settle this for us, Dr. Keene? The Earth, is it flat or round?
Yeah, it's round, and people have pretty much known that for a while. This is another one of those things that, you know, I teach a course on astronomy, and students come in, they often have the view that, you know, Columbus sailed the ocean blue, and that's when he was expecting to fall off the edge of the Earth, and of course he didn't, and that's when people found out that the Earth was not flat, it was really round. But if you read anything beyond what maybe the simplest writing would tell you, you'll find that as far back as the ancient Greeks, people knew that the Earth was round, and there are convincing arguments for that.
This is perhaps a good time to just reiterate or mention that that our guests do not speak for the hosts of this show, because I don't know if we can all endorse everything that Dr. Keene is going to say.
Yeah, I'm still, you know, Shaquille O'Neal does have a doctorate, and has come out pretty strong on.
Was he flat Earth?
He has said it's a flat Earth, and so I think that has to be weighed. Ben, we didn't just play something terribly inappropriate over there, did we?
No, I was trying to find the clip. I'll edit it out. You guys won't even know that.
All right. I never know when you're clicking on my computer what might come up, and so I wanted to see if I had to be asked for absolution or anything.
No, I was actually just trying to find the exact quote from Shaquille O'Neal, and Kyrie Irving was another one, and he said...
And Draymond Green as well.
Oh, really? He said that, well, how come every summer when I drive from Florida to California, the Earth is pretty flat? So, I mean... Dr. Keene, do you have an answer for that? I mean, that's true. I mean, that's when you drive from A to B, it's flat.
Yeah, I guess it seems like it.
Oh, we may have a convert here.
Yes, we may be winning him over. Well, while we've got him on the ropes here, I have a question here that I think is very important. Does the sun rotate around the Earth or the moon around the sun?
Well...
I would like to just briefly explain how red we have Dr. Keene's face right now. Aliva, what do you think? Does the sun rotate around the Earth or the moon around the sun?
The moon around the sun. The moon rotates around the Earth, and the Earth rotates around the sun, and the moon is rotating around the sun.
You know, you're sure of this?
Yes.
Dr. Keene, would you agree with Aliva's take on this?
Yeah, she'll have to run through that one more time.
So you said, once again, it's moon around Earth, Earth around sun?
Yeah, that sounds right.
All right, we'll go with that for now.
Should we take a vote?
Yeah, I'm still trying to get past this whole flat Earth thing, because I have driven across the Midwest, and it is rather flat. When did the devil hide all the dinosaur bones in the ground?
Yeah, you're right. I wasn't aware of these questions.
All right, we'll quickly just go through a couple of more. Did Jurassic Park really happen?
Like, there's a studio where they filmed it, right? So,
but no real dinosaurs have been made yet.
Well, so I always...
In Generac, there's that one glowing room. I sometimes teach in 105 or 109, and there's like this weird glow in there, and I know Hankel's playing with disease in there, but I've always wondered if there might be like a velociraptor or something being cloned.
Well, I always like to mention to my kids that, you know, it depends on how you define dinosaurs, right? Like, if you look at a crocodile, that looks pretty scary. It looks like a big green lizard. And
I would agree with that.
But because it's still alive, it must not be a dinosaur, right?
I've never thought about that.
Yeah, I think preconditioned to be a dinosaur is you have to be extinct, right?
Right, exactly. So if they're extinct and they're green and scary looking, then they must be a dinosaur. Right, that's sort of the definition, I think.
The gravity, real or state of mind?
Well, it depends what you mean by real. So it's something that pulls on us, but you can't really.
So it's a not feeling.
I can't really show it to you. It's sort of.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at. Would you agree or disagree with R. Kelly that if I believe so, then I can fly?
No, you can't fly.
Okay, so R. Kelly is lying to us.
And Shaquille O'Neal.
That's true. Yeah, we're just going to have a list of liars at the end of the episode. Albert Einstein, was he working for Putin?
No, that's not possible, right? Well, I don't know. So when was Putin born?
Who's asking the questions here?
I believe it was after the first year of the unicorn. On some mountain in Kazakhstan.
I assume he's like 500 years old and he just never dies.
That's the impression I get as well. What music do you play to get really pumped up for the lab? No music.
I don't even let my students go in the gym
where you just want to get amped, you know.
No, see, I don't usually let my students listen to music in my lab, and they really don't like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and no food either. Actually, I let them have food, you know, but as soon as they spill something, I say no more.
If the lab were outside, would you let them have food?
Yeah, I would.
Aliva, does that make you happy?
Yes.
Excellent. All right, we're almost at the end here. Is botany really science, or is it just looking at trees?
That's what science is. It's looking at things.
Because I took botany in college. I only had to take two science classes, and we mostly looked at trees.
Yeah, that sounds like
so
a science.
So I remember they're either coniferous or decepticons is what I remember from botany. I told my lab partners, I don't care if I pass this class, but you probably do.
Yeah, botany's a science.
Yeah. All right. Clearly, the botany lobby has gotten to Dr. Keene, but we won't dwell on that. My last question is a member of the theology department. This is something I've oftentimes wondered about. Why do you guys get microscopes and all kinds of toys, and all we get is Bibles?
I don't use a microscope really, but we do get a lot of toys. And I don't know. Do you guys? What do you guys do in theology laboratories?
Well, I would like to start having them. And I think probably we would wrestle with flat Earth, round Earth type issues. Maybe investigating faith, some sort of like radiation device to see faith in the heart, you know, things along that, trust falls. I would like to do Lutheran trust falls where you just let them hit the ground and say original sin. But I would like some sort of equipment for that. All right. Well, I thank Dr. Keene for being a good sport. I wanted to have a little bit of fun at the expense of science, because it's something I don't understand. So to get
Quick, I don't know, Wade just kind of interjected another free-for-all here. I wanted to ask Dr. Keene a real question, a real science question that's kind of been nagging at me, and I think you might have an opinion on this, but do you think that there is any question whatsoever that the Gorder-Mellink mutual friction exponent, M, has a value of 3?
Well, that was measured years back, but it might not be exactly 3.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This is interesting.
Exactly.
Okay.
It sounds like you've done a little bit of research here.
It's just been nagging question.
Peter had sent me the other day, he had been looking at some of Dr. Keene's work, and I told him, I said, I've studied a lot of languages, but I can't understand what it's talking about. It was above my head, so I'm glad Peter was willing to bring up one of the subjects that Dr. Keene has worked with. And so as we get into a little bit more seriously on the main topic, and I thank you for being a good sport, Carrie, one of the things I'll say I appreciate about my colleagues over in the science building, one of the privileges of being at a college like ours, in a liberal arts college, is talking to people who get stuff you don't get, and appreciating that their knowledge and the things they do understand. And in a setting where I think most of us tend to appreciate each other's disciplines and what we do, and it can oftentimes lead to very good conversation and different perspective that comes from things. And I think I heard you speak on these volumes before, and just kind of looking at some of them out in the library, what you've done with these 4 volumes, A Student's Guide Through the Great Physics Texts, more information about them too, I'm guessing, can be found on Carrie's site, www.carriekeen.com. is a rather interesting and fascinating thing, taking students back to how people have wrestled with and asked big questions about these things throughout the past and in quite a span of past. And I think showing how, you know, you think of a God brings the animals to in pairs to Adam, and I sometimes joke in ethics that this shows that God is Aristotelian, and he has Adam put them in categories and name them. But, you know, it's this human thing that we love to look at the world around us and ask questions and categorize and name. And so maybe briefly, before we get into some of my serious questions for you, would be if you can first just tell us a little bit about, if you were explaining to someone who's maybe not familiar with the field, what is physics? And then secondly, if you want to tie into that, these books and what you're trying to do in that regard with these.
Yeah, sure. So physics is, it's become much more narrow over time, people's definition of what physics is. But I think a very broad definition would be looking at nature and trying to understand it very carefully. And really, physics over time has evolved into the study pretty much of inanimate stuff. Okay, so studying whether it's particles or gases or fluids or the stars, things that people generally think of as inanimate. And there is quite a bit of overlap between physics and the other sciences like chemistry and biology. There aren't quite as clear dividing lines as I think some people would like to set up. I think a lot of those are set up primarily for funding reasons. But I think when you look at nature and you honestly try to understand it, you take those questions where they lead, and you what I like to do at least is not be restrained by artificial boundaries that people set up and say, this is, you know, you're not doing physics right now, you've kind of wandered into biology, so you shouldn't be doing this, or, you know, you've wandered into philosophical issues and you shouldn't be doing that. And I think that's, you know, kind of segue into the books that I've been working on is I try to not set up artificial boundaries that really constrain what we're allowed to consider. And I think that's something you find in some of the older writings that, you know, you read Kepler, you read Newton, you read Galileo, and they allow the discussion to go where it naturally will go, and they don't stop and say, well, wait a minute, we're getting into philosophical or theological issues here, so we better stop the discussion because this is a physics book after all, right? So what I tried to do in my book is to draw students' attention to some of these older writings some are quite old. Some date back to ancient Greece. Some are around the Middle Ages. Some are Renaissance. Some are more contemporary writings. But I try to pick out writings that will engage the students and raise big questions and allow them to react to significant issues that I think are of general concern to people.
What has been the student response to that? And is there a particular volume or a particular thinker that you find that they've found especially interesting?
Yeah, well, I mean, student responses range from, I can't stand this, to, wow, this is really, really neat. But I found that that's pretty much the case no matter how I've taught physics, you know. So back when I was using, I guess I would call them traditional textbooks, where you open the book. These are the kind that are used at, you know, not to pick on The Ohio State University, but there, you know, they'll have a book.
I'm absolutely fine with picking on The Ohio State University as a Michigan resident and a Michigan State fan. I encourage picking on the SEC school of the Big Ten. But yeah, sorry,
I'm from Columbus, Ohio originally. So
yeah, I forgot about that. But exactly, right. Now we have some tension here.
Exactly.
The Michigan and Ohio, if I remember, did actually go to war once over Toledo, and we won. You had to keep it. But I'll let you keep going. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, where was I? So I think a lot of times in these textbooks, there's a pretty formulaic approach where science is sort of presented as an accomplished fact. You know, here are the laws, memorize these laws. Oh, and here are a few problems you can work out to learn how to plug numbers in and get the right answer. And then they might, you know, take a little bit of segue into, here are some technological applications of these accepted laws. But everything's really presented as an accomplished fact, and the students are just sort of memorizing the canonical explanation of things. And in my view, that really masks the way science is actually done. And what's fun is when you read a Galileo, for instance, his dialogues particularly, he will explain the science of, let's say, projectile motion, but then he presents this as a play where you have one person representing Galileo's ideas and another one representing different ideas, and they debate and they say, well, you know, I don't agree with your ideas. And so you see this polemical debate. And the student, in reading this, has to sort of wrestle with the same kinds of issues that Galileo was wrestling with. And I think, yeah, that's what I really want to hold before the student, the greatest writing and thinking about science that's been committed to writing.
If I'm not mistaken, and I was just trying to Google it to make sure that I'm not mistaken, and it took me to a Stanford page that wants me to put in a too much information, but I believe it was Wittenberg under Luther that was the first to publish Copernicus. Does that sound right?
Right. So I don't – the publisher of – I guess I'm thinking of Galileo's works was Elsevier, a Dutch publishing company. But Copernicus' work was the introduction to it. It was written by Osiander, who was a Lutheran theologian. And he sort of helped shepherd this through the press. I don't remember who the eventual publisher was, but Copernicus on the Revolutions of the Heavenly Spheres was dedicated to one of the popes, but the introduction was written by Osiander, a Lutheran theologian.
And I think that's an interesting connection, and I don't know why Stanford won't just tell me what I want to know. They want me to read a whole bunch of other stuff to get there. But the reason I ask that is, you know, teaching at a Lutheran college and having been, I'm assuming a Lutheran or a Christian before going into the study of physics, do you think there was anything that from religious background that drew you to the field, or now as one teaching in it, do you see any particular value? Not that I kind of get a kick out of, we have this March for Science the other day, and we'll get into, you know, the different kinds of sciences. And, you know, sometimes people, I remember back in the 90s, which was the high point for Christians just being corny, and you'd have, like, the Christian yellow pages so you could get a Christian plumber who I'm guessing knew some, like, secret Jesus move.
We still see those.
For fixing your...
We have those at our church.
Oh, really? Well, then we may want to cut that later. What you know, I don't mean this you know, that a Christian physicist or scientist does physics or science differently, but what I do think is you know, at a Lutheran college or as a Lutheran, is there any way that you feel you've been pushed in to want to ask some of these questions, or that there's been any perspective you've been able to bring to your faith through the work that you're doing?
Yeah. I think that a lot of times the way physics is approached is, I'll use a division that I think was probably understood better several hundred years ago, but I think physics a lot of times is presented as one of the practical arts, where you're learning how to build, you know, better semiconductors or how to design the latest technological advancement. I guess what draws me to physics is thinking about it more like one of the liberal arts, where you're interested in deeper, I'm interested in deeper issues. And I think as a liberal art, by looking at nature, one's thoughts are invariably drawn toward the divine and philosophical issues. It's not, and this is something that's really apparent when you read Maxwell or Newton, for instance. They start with, let's study light or let's study electricity. But even within their scientific texts, it's not long before they start asking questions that have theological or philosophical implications. You know, so for example, Maxwell, in some of his writings on atoms, he says that atoms, he describes very clearly and articulately the properties of atoms and writes down equations and so on, but then he goes on to say that atoms have the essential character of a manufactured article. Hmm. And then goes on to say that this is evidence for the existence of God. Now, you may or may not agree with him on that. You may think that this is not good evidence or it is good evidence, but the very fact that he includes this in a scientific writing, I think it shows how some of these great thinkers were thinking more broadly about the implications of what they're doing. And that's really what interests me, some of the philosophical issues that I think are issues that most people think about. And really, physics is just paying careful attention to nature and trying to understand it and the beauty of nature. And I think it really does quickly draw the mind toward the Creator.
Well, excellent. And I guess very helpful for me as I think about these things. With that in mind, and you've mentioned a couple of historic figures and thoughts that they've had in your four books or in the great thinkers that you looked at. Is there one in particular, or maybe one story or account that you stands out as one you particularly enjoy or find instructive or funny, whatever the case may be?
Yeah, sure. So one of my favorite people to read is Michael Faraday, and he is the one who came up with the idea of the magnetic field back in the 1830s, 1840s. I think people take for granted, oh, yeah, you have a magnet. There's a magnetic field around it.
This is where they grow magnets?
Exactly. They harvest them. For
okay, sorry.
And he had this idea that when you have a magnet, there's this real thing that exists around it and exerts forces on other nearby magnets. And this is there's an interesting debate that goes on around the discussion of magnetic fields. But in the course of reading Michael Faraday's works, he wasn't mathematical at all. His training in mathematics was actually quite weak. So reading his laboratory notebooks are just very descriptive and rich descriptions of what he did in the laboratory. Very meticulous, but some of the experiments that he did were just really funny to read about. So he'll have a drawing of a bucket of water, and he'll say, this is an eel that we found, and if I grab the eel at point A and point B, and there will be an A and a B drawn on the eel, I get an extreme shock. And when I grab it at A and C, the shock is not so bad. And he'll do things like holding electrified things up to his eye.
I take it he had graduate assistance for this?
Presumably he did.
This reminds me of when the doctor shows you the smiley faces and then down to the frowny faces and says, how do you feel on this scale, right?
Right, and just holding up electrified things to his eye, for instance, and saying, oh, yeah, my eye would begin to tingle and I could see colors, things that just seemed ludicrous now. But those are the kind of things he described in his notebooks.
That is fascinating. I'm guessing that's not something you're doing in the lab.
I don't. My students probably do.
After hours. Is there... I guess you've heard my science questions already, so knowing my scientific background and take, if you were to briefly, for a layman, explain some of the things you're working on now from a lab perspective or research perspective, what you mentioned some briefly in passing earlier, what particularly has been grabbing your attention lately?
Well, my training originally was in low temperature physics. So back in graduate school in Santa Barbara, I focused on cryogenics. You know, and we tried to freeze Walt Disney's brain. Actually, no, that's not what we did. But my work was on liquid helium. And when I came here to the college back in 2001, I thought, well, that'd be fun to do the same kind of research. But then I realized it's about a factor of 10 too expensive to do. And so I went into doing more room temperature fluid dynamics research. And I just think the study of fluids is fascinating because it's a very complicated system that's very rich and also very beautiful to look at some of the images of fluid flows. I mean, who hasn't liked looking at the swirling colors in bubbles, for instance, when you're blowing bubbles? And so my research interests have evolved a little bit. But right now I'm trying to build a piece of equipment to study the dynamics of fluid of soap films. And I have a few students working on this project, and we've gotten some apparatus up and working, and that's been a lot of fun.
Well, I believe it. I have to imagine it has to be extremely satisfying to see the students getting into that process of the research and building a apparatus. Is that how we say it over there? Is it apparatuses?
One of them, I guess, would be apparatus. That's
would plural be the
apparatus? So that's like the second... declension.
Uh-oh, look at this, busting out the Latin on us. This isn't a Renaissance man we have here.
Yeah, Carrie definitely is a Renaissance man. I just want to say what the if you're interested in what Carrie's doing, definitely visit his website. It's you know, he's got some of his stuff up there, but it's also a way to get in touch with him. It's carriekkeen.com, and we'll put that in the show notes as well. If you are driving right now, don't run into the car in front of you trying to write that down quick. You could rewind too when you got home, but
or don't run into a bicyclist either.
Or a bicyclist. That's true. It might be Carrie.
I was going to say as a Michigander, if you do, deny. but generally maybe don't is the best way to go. One last important question that's been weighing on me. Peter's face, we can now see it every Easter, it seems. He shaves it. Bring back the beard or keep the baby face?
I liked the beard.
Yeah, I thought the beard had this like Nietzschean kind of like deep quality. The baby face is all right. Allie and Oliva, what do you think? Baby face or beard?
I say beard. I see a beard, too.
Oh, Peter, do you have thoughts on this?
When I first wanted to grow a beard, my wife just dissuaded me from that for a long time. And finally,
did she dissuade you or she did not permit you?
She did not permit me. You're married, aren't you, Wade?
Yeah, I've been there.
So finally, I just decided I would ask for forgiveness later and started growing it. And it didn't take too long, and she said, wow, that looks pretty good. I kind of like that. And so now when I went to shave this year, she said, you know, you don't have to shave it all the way off. You could just shave it down. So she's definitely been converted as well.
Well, that's excellent. I'd love to say my wife has been, when I first started growing it out, and I never thought I'd be able to. I was pretty pleased with myself and had a, pretty full-scale, I don't know what brand of terrorism. It could be, you know, right wing. It could be whatever. But my passport has an impressively, probably frightening picture of me with my mosaic beard. But my wife always complained about the mustache, right? And so that's why I went with the Amish beard. That was our way of compromising. It's not a sign of my pacifism by any means, like with the Amish. But she'll still point out that she does not like the beard. So she has not been won over. But in my favor, the first time I did shave it off way back, Sophie cried for a few days and would not come to me. She didn't recognize me and apparently did not like my face. So I think hopefully I can win my beloved over at some point. Anything else, gentlemen in the room, we have before I'll maybe take us to our close today?
I have just one question for you, Carrie. So there's a transition coming from a philosophy background. You said that in physics, philosophy, you know, in background or underpinnings were kind of an interest to you. You know, physics comes out of what philosophers called natural philosophy, mm-hmm. right? And so as in nature, not like natural law, but studying nature, right? So mm-hmm. is there, with all of your background and kind of looking at the history of physics, I'm sure you've dealt with that a lot. Can you just say a few words about that?
Yeah, if you read older physics writings, they will clearly refer to themselves as natural philosophers. And, you know, it seems like the breaking apart into specific disciplines of physics, biology, you know, I should have this information at my fingertips. I don't. The term physicist, I believe that was first used by an English scientist maybe in the 1800s or late 1800s. I don't have that information at my fingertips.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
But I seem to remember his name begins with W. but I think those are just labels, right? Mm-hmm. And I generally like the natural philosopher concept better because it does speak to the fact that we're interested in broader issues than just building iPhones, right?
Sure. Well, no, and the whole idea of philosophy being a lover of wisdom, and so a lover of wisdom that nature has to offer to us is, mm-hmm. Ties back into that nicely. So, yeah, thank you.
Allie, are you itching to get out of here, or did you have something to say? I see you were raising your hand and you're dancing a little.
So, do boys, like, do something to just get beards, or what do they have to do to get beards?
They have to become men. And this is the ancients, right? I believe it was the Greeks who used to say there's two kinds of people without beards, women and children, right? So they just, as you get older, you lose hair. If you're a guy, you lose the hair you want and you grow hair places you never thought you could. So it's just part of getting old and fat and generally approaching death, Ellie.
So all men grow beards?
Not all men. God has gifted some men.
Peter.
Yeah.
I was envious of Peter's beard.
It was getting fantastic, the whole mustache thing, too. Not all people can grow beards, and I think, I don't know if I'm going to get called out on this. I believe part of a historically, you know, certain groups maybe grow beards better than other groups. I don't know that I have any hard data on that. But I think it depends on the person. Peter, do you have any, as our resident philosopher, any deep philosophical thought on the beard question Ellie has posed?
This gets us dangerously close to things Kant may have said about differences in people, and I don't want to go there today.
We did appeal to the alt-right. Was that two episodes ago or one episode ago? So yeah, it's probably best if we back away from that one. Well, with that in mind, I will... bring us to our close, thanking Dr. Keene again for being with us. Please do check out the show notes. We'll have information on his website, which we've mentioned, carriekkeene.com, as well as his books, The Four Volumes of Student's Guide Through the Great Physics Texts. We thank Ellie and Oliva for joining us today and helping us in our conversation. And so I guess as we come to a close, as we look at the world around us, as we think about the various sciences and physics, When it all boils down, Dr. Keene, what's the one thing we can really do?
We can let the bird fly.
Every evening when the sun goes down, get with my party and I begin to cry. I don't care what